This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And welcome to The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. Sorry for the late start. It's one of those days, isn't it, Bob?
That's right, yes.
I'll take credit for that. Well, good morning. What's on your mind today?
You know, I've mentioned about compost several times throughout the show, so I thought I'd go into just a little more detail. You know, and I've told you can do the compost bin, make it with pallets, or you can just get a garbage can, poke some holes in the bottom for drainage, or you can even just use a garbage bag for composting. The good things you want to put into the compost, and then I'll talk about the bad. And that's the good things are going to be like sod, grass clippings, hay, straw, weeds that don't have seed heads on them. Some of them it doesn't really matter. Chopped corn stalks, corn cobs, sawdust, shredded newspaper, cardboard, excellent stuff. Wood ash, hedge clippings, leaves, any other plant material. I did mention the newspaper and cardboard. That can be a real big benefit because that's carbon. And carbon is going to be the catalyst for the compost pile. Some of the bad things that you could put in your compost pile, but you don't want to. Anything with grease, fat, meat, bones, these create odors and can attract unwanted animals. Now, if you stay away from that stuff, your compost is not going to create any odors, so you don't have to worry about that. And how it all works is bacteria and fungi and microbes are the key players in compost, and they use carbon and nitrogen to live and reproduce. So the equation, you know, they give you is organic yard waste and food waste and oxygen plus water and plus soil organisms start the whole process. Now, even a better way to do that is when you're throwing the old sod and grass clippings and stuff in there, you make about a 6-inch layer of that, and then throw in a shovel full of soil, because the soil is going to have all the microbes and little creatures and worms in it that are going to feed on all that material you've thrown in there and make it a much quicker process. So it is a good idea, you know, to throw in a shovel full of soil every now and then. So that's going a little deeper on the process of compost. And like I said, everybody can do it. Even just a garbage can or a garbage bag works. And it's what us gardeners call black gold. That's what's really going to feed your plants and loosen up that clay-based soil that we have. Even when you just dump it on top, it will work its way down in and make your soil much better. So keep that in mind.
All right, will do.
I also mentioned, you know, bring in your house plants. I hope you've done it already, or if they're under a porch, maybe they didn't get frosted yet. But it's extremely important that when you bring them in, you really got to inspect them. Inspect the leaves on top and underneath. You know, if you see anything that looks a little different, you may want to wipe that off. A little soap and water works well. Inspect the stems, because there are insects that just hang out on the stem. So inspect that. And inspect the soil. When you water it, look for any little dust particles that may be flying out of it. That's probably fungus gnats. It's real common, fungus gnats. So put that little dish of cider vinegar next to the plant. They'll jump in there and drown, and that'll take care of them. Maybe even before you bring it in, take a garden hose, lay your plant down, and give it a good blast under the leaves, on the stem, all the way around it, and that'll take care of a lot of insects because they're easy to get rid of. And then another thing you want to do this time of year is take care of your garden tools. Most garden tools can last a lifetime if you take care of them. Don't put that shovel or rake back in the shed or anywhere with mud clinging to it because that's going to cause rust. So try to clean them off. I like to even put a little oil on it once in a while. I get lazy and just spray them with WD-40. That'll stop that rust from occurring and keep it nice and clean. And another thing I wanted to talk about, because I had talked about bulb planting, and there's still plenty of time to plant bulbs. You can plant bulbs right up to when the ground freezes. Then it gets a little difficult. So I brought in a tool here that...
See that? It's a battery-operated drill, it looks like, with a cool attachment.
With an auger on it, so that I can place that where I want to plant a bulb and pull the trigger, and that'll drill in the soil, and then it has this little flapper on the end that will move the soil to the side as you're drilling the hole, so it leaves the hole totally empty. Then you can drop the bulb in, put it in, and then push that soil back over it and give it a maybe a little pat with your hand or your foot to make it nice and firm. And that's all there is to planting bulbs. I can't stress enough how easy bulbs are and how rewarding they are, because they're going to be the first thing to flower in the spring. So just an electric drill and an auger. You don't have to crawl around. You can do it standing up. They make them all sorts of ways. They even make extensions, so if you can't even bend over, you can do it standing straight up to drill that hole. And where that big flat piece of iron is, that's about the depth that most bulbs are going to be planted. So it tells you even the correct depth that you want. And that way you get consistent depth of all your bulbs, so they'll all bloom at a certain time instead of planting 1 2 inches and then 1 6 or 8 inches. Those two will bloom at different times because of the soil depth. So that's a neat product. You can pick them up in any hardware store where Smith's has them. A neat one to go for.
Drill attachment auger. I like it.
Yeah. Makes the life a whole lot easier for planting bulbs.
Unless you're in my yard, then as soon as you try to drill, then you're going to hit a rock.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
A boulder.
Yeah.
Not a rock. Those could. It looks like that could take care of small rocks.
Yes, it can. But a big rock, no. And the drill will stop right away, so be prepared.
Yeah.
Have a good grip, you know, so it doesn't twist your wrist or something. But most gardens, you know, you've already developed the soil and gotten rid of most of the rocks. So try that out. That makes life a lot easier. Now, I want to tell a little story. It's one of my favorite stories, so I have to tell this
story one. Story time. We'll hear it next after our sponsor on The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. Back in 30 seconds.
You know it's coming. That colder weather is on the way. Make sure you're ready with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. It's not too early to start stocking up on wood pellets for your heating stove. If it's time to replace your pellet stove, see Worth W. Smith for their line of quality Harman stoves. You'll also find a big selection of stove pipes and other heating supplies in stock. And don't forget the antifreeze for your RV. Be prepared for the weather ahead. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome Welcome back to the Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. As promised, story time.
Yeah.
Take it away, Bob.
And this is a story about Ernest Wilson. He's also called Chinese Wilson. And he explored China. He was allowed in, which not many people were, but he was such a nice guy. He was allowed in. And he explored China extensively. And in 1910, he had just escaped sacrificing his life to lilies, the Easter lily being one of them. He had gathered a huge load of lily bulbs, and on his way home, when his mule train was caught by an avalanche, he jumped off his mule just before it fell down a cliff, but his leg was broken by a fallen rock. And at the same time, another mule train came from the other direction. And in order to prevent another avalanche, by climbing up out of the way, Wilson was forced to lie on his back while more than 40 mules stepped over him. He did reach safety, but was left with what he called a lily limp. So that's where that term lily limp came from. It came from Ernest Wilson in his gathering of lilies. And he was an important guy, well, a real important plant collector. And to continue on, you know, he brought back the Easter lily, and they started growing it in California. And one of the growers noticed that, geez, it always bloomed at Easter time. So they started marketing it as an Easter lily, and that made it famous. And that grower made a lot of money because he was sharp enough to discover when that lily wanted to bloom, and houses were really in need of a flowering plant at that time of year. Another story. I was lucky enough to visit the biosphere in Arizona. Now, that's a mammoth greenhouse. At one time, it was the largest, and still may be, largest greenhouse on Earth. And it was developed to put man in there, in that greenhouse, to see if he could live there all year round. And it worked, but it didn't work. You know, I told you about one thing they didn't realize was that the huge amount of cement they used in the process off gases for several decades. And that did hurt a lot of the plants and robbed the air of a lot of oxygen. But it did work in another way. But there's a plant in there, two plants in there. And each area is divided off into a different section on Earth. And as you go into this section, you walk down a ramp into the desert section. And there are two cactuses growing on either side of the, on one side of the railing. And one had tipped over onto the other one. Now, they weren't laying on the ground. It just tipped over and rested against the other one. And its needles pierced that other cactus. But the growers had noticed in that area where both of those cactuses were having trouble with disease and insects, and they just couldn't keep up with it. Well, the one that tipped over onto the other with its needles pierced the other one, and they started exchanging chemicals through that one needle. And it benefited both of them to where the growers didn't have to treat either cactus anymore. So it's just a fascinating thing with a partnership with plants. Okay.
All right. And how do we use that in our situation?
Oh. Just so many interesting things that plants can do.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me something spectacular, like then those two cactuses together produced.
Oh, no, no.
This wonderful vaccine that is going to prevent illiteracy. I don't know.
Hey, you never know. You never know. But a lot of interesting experiments have come out of the biosphere. It's a wonderful place to visit. I was lucky enough that I got there on a day where they could tell I was very interested in the plants. And they asked me if I'd be willing to help out with one of the experiments they were doing. And the experiment was different roof coverings, especially out west there where it gets pretty hot, and how they can generate less heat. So we were taking measurements of the type of material used on the roof, the color of the material, and we'd use a gun there that read the temperature, and we go around and log the temperatures and then try to decide which kind of roof materials would be best for the southwest there, which is real important. And no doubt they're going to find out what's better material for the northeast here even, because what would generate the heat to help keep the snow and ice off our roofs. So was a great time, the biosphere. I highly recommend visiting it. You'll just be shocked at the size of it and all the different areas. You know, there's an ocean in there. There's a desert in there.
Wow.
There's a tropical forest in there.
Now, do they purposely put, like, insects and things in there, too?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. Yes. Yeah, they experiment in all sorts of ways. And, there's hillsides where they can measure the slope and runoff of water and how it would affect different areas on Earth. It's just a very fascinating place. I know it was all started to see if man could live in a biosphere, but they've continued on. I think it's all run by the University of Arizona now. It's not a government thing.
So do they charge, like, is it like a museum? They charge admission to get in and
yeah,
you could walk
yeah,
around and
yes,
stuff?
Yes, yeah.
Neat. Okay.
I was lucky enough that one day, just to continue on and bore you here, that some of the scientists that started the whole experiment were there. And we got to talk to them. And I was kind of shocked at some of their knowledge. You know, they said it was tough growing all different food crops for the people to live off of. And one of the people in my group asked, well, did they grow apple trees? And the scientist couldn't answer the question. And it really shocked me that he couldn't, because you can't grow an apple tree in a biosphere or a greenhouse, because it must go through that cold, dark season, the winters that we have, in order to produce a flower and then produce a fruit. So it would have never worked in the biosphere. You know, yeah, they could grow bananas, but the people in there got sick and tired of eating bananas every day.
Yeah.
And a lot of other fruits are like that. You know, they need that cold period and dark period in order to initiate flowering and fruit production.
Well, couldn't they have just adjusted the light and the, you know, the AC?
Well, they could have, but they would have had to make a whole separate room.
Yeah, the apple room.
Yeah, the apple room, yep. for that purpose. And I don't know if it would, well, no, it does get cold enough in the desert. The desert can get extremely cold. But they didn't do that, and I was kind of shocked that they really didn't know about that.
They did have climate control, though, right?
Yes.
They have, like, heat and air conditioning? And
yeah,
well, I guess
they
you
do.
Do you need heat in the desert? I don't know. At night it gets
cold,
though, right?
Yeah, at night you do, because it can get below freezing at night. And so some plants, like the tropical forest they have, they needed to heat that area. The desert area, they didn't need to heat, because those plants were going through the same cycle as what they would go through if they were outdoors.
Right.
So very, very interesting place. And, you know, and I even said even an ocean in there. Now, it's not a huge ocean.
Right.
It's a facsimile, and it does create the waves, so they can experiment with plant life in the ocean and animal life, too.
All right. Well, we're at 9:02 a.m. Did you have one more topic that you wanted to get to? We'll go a little bit over since we started late.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of information about grass. And some people think it's a bad thing, and I think it's a good thing. Grass covers one quarter of the earth and feeds more life than any other plant. From the north of the tree line grows grass in the tundra to the tropics. And it can be cut and grazed to the ground level and still recover. And it supported 3 million caribou on the tundra. And it supported 2 million gazelles on the savanna of Asia. And it supported millions of wildebeest in the savanna of Africa. And wherever some rain falls, you can get grass. And at one time in America, it supported 60 million bison at one time in the great grasslands of America. An adult bison can weigh as much as one ton. And in Tibet, the highest grass plateau on earth supports the wild ass in the world, or the pika, it's called. It's a relative of the rabbit. And elephant grass is the tallest in the world, along with bamboo and corn. Those are grasses also.
Corn's a grass,
yes,
huh?
Corn is really a grass.
Wow.
And there's still a lot of debate on how the corn was developed. Most scientists think it came from a plant called tizanite, which is a small grass, but did develop a little seed head on it. Not really a cob, and over the generations that in South America, by choosing the correct seeds, those people 10,000 years ago developed a nice cob with several kernels, and they kept developing more and more. Probably was discovered in a trash heap, the newer varieties, but so it was man-made, really. So that's a little story about the corn.
And grass in general.
And grass in general, yes. Yes.
Fascinating. I never knew that about grass, that corn was a offshoot of that.
Yes.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for here on The Gardening Show. And we'll be back next week right here on B107.5 FM. Have a great weekend.